97 The Fan and the Baltimore Orioles welcome you to this presentation of the Hot Stove Show.
Play ball!
This is the Hot Stove Show on the flagship station of the Baltimore Orioles. 105.7 The Fan, an hour-long look at baseball off-season transactions, player trades, deals, and the upcoming Orioles baseball season. Live from the Orioles Grill at the Sheraton Inner Harbor, here's the Hot Stove Show with your host, Jim Hunter, on 105.7 The Fan.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Sheraton Hotel, the Orioles Grill, our new home for Hot Stove Baseball, final show before Christmas. And Rock can't wait for Christmas, his favorite holiday of the year, because Emily is promising him so many presents this year, it's going to take the entire morning to unwrap those presents.
You know, Jim, before we begin, shouldn't I sing to you? Da-da-da-da-da-da, they say it's your birthday.
Watch
it's
out
not
for
my birthday, too.
Watch out for copyright.
It's a happy birthday to you.
Thank you very much. And, you know you've made it when the Oriole bird wishes you a happy birthday on
big.
Twitter. I mean, that was big. Even at a photo from one of Marco's corporate sales events that he obviously saves photos, the bird and I, we take pictures all the time.
But sure.
I was very nice of him and appreciate all the well wishes, especially from you in that text this morning. I didn't even know you knew it was my birthday. I was trying to keep it low.
You can't keep the news for me, Jim.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, along those lines, everybody, we appreciate you coming out tonight. The last I looked, it's now, 5:31 and 45 seconds on a Thursday night, December 21st, which is, the shortest day of the year. But Manny Machado is still an Oriole.
Yes, he is.
So what's going on with these so-called offers that teams were making to Dan Duquette to try to get Manny on their team?
Isn't it fun to ride this roller coaster here?
Oh, yeah, it's great.
He's not going anywhere. Wait, it looks like he probably will. No, he's not. Well, he still could. At last check, and I've been writing for a few days now that, the offers coming in for Manny weren't quite as strong as maybe some reports had suggested. Teams were reluctant to put those top prospects, especially pitching prospects that the Orioles wanted, on the table if Manny wasn't going to negotiate an extension and it was going to be a one-month rental. And the Orioles don't feel pressure where they absolutely have to move him, of course. So what I'm being told now is it's not like talks are dead, and there's no way Manny doesn't get Manny gets traded. If somebody doubles back in a week, 2 weeks, whatever, and puts these guys on the table, the Orioles can react to that. But in the meantime, they're at the point now where, and I've heard the Cardinals have backed out a little bit here. They've kind of moved out of this, but there are other teams still kind of poking around, including the Diamondbacks. I was told Chicago, not sure which one, probably
right.
The Cubs at this point. But teams are still like staying engaged. But you reach the point if you're Dan Duquette where you have to say, okay, we got to start planning as if Manny's on the team, where he's going to play. If it's shortstop, we might need a third baseman. If it's third base, is Beckham our shortstop? Then who's our utility player? There's a domino effect here, and you can't just continue to hold off waiting to see if you're able to trade a Manny Machado, and then all of a sudden you're stuck where you don't have the guys in place. The offseason has to progress. They don't have enough left-handed hitters. They need at least, some people say five starters, two for the current rotation, plus maybe an in-house candidate, and then you need guys in AAA. There's a lot of stuff that still has to go on. Utility player, they want a veteran catcher. So they're not going to be held hostage by trade talks. But that doesn't mean that there's no way now that he gets traded. It still could happen, but right now there's really nothing hot at all.
And I think it's important to point out, and Dan Duquette went out of his way with you and some of the other beat writers the other day, they're not out there shopping Manny Machado. They know what he can do for their team, even if it is for just one more season before he becomes a free agent. But they would be silly not to listen to any offers. Unfortunately, as you've just described, the offers are not what it would entice Dan Duquette and the Orioles to say, okay, we only have one more year of Manny, very likely because of the contract
right.
demand, so let's see what we can get back. In particular, when you look back a couple of years ago, when at the trading deadline, the Yankees traded Aroldis Chapman to the Cubs. They traded Andrew Miller to the Indians. And they got eight top prospects, including the Cubs' number one, Gleyber Torres. So I don't blame Dan Duquette for expecting more back than what's been offered.
Right, exactly. And, I know it seems like, well, if you're not going to get maximum value now, how are you going to get anything at the deadline? And yet you've just provided examples of how that happens. There are people in the industry, and I talked to them at the winter meetings, where they said, there could be better offers out there at the end of July, when certain contenders are more clearly defined, teams become more desperate, all of a sudden we've got to get this guy to put us over the hump, or we got to keep him from going here to this team that's on our heels right now or that we're chasing. So a deal could still come together. But there's no reason to say, and I see fans say, well, just get something for him. Well,
why?
You don't, just get anything. They got something for Eddie Murray when they traded him to the Dodgers. I don't think anybody was too excited about what happened with Juan Bell and guys in that trade. You don't just take anything. If you can't get what you think is going to be, again, two, they desperately need starting pitching. If you're not going to get guys who are going to solve that need for you, you know, some top prospects, then you don't need to move him right now. But then you're going to have to get real creative and find a way to fill those rotation spots, because if you're going to hold on to him, then you're giving the indication, okay, now we're really going all in again here. Well, you can't go all in with the rotation the way it's currently set up, or if you just add a couple guys on the cheap who are still out there in free agency but aren't really going to be difference makers or aren't significant upgrades over Miley, over Jimenez, over Tillman. So if you're going to hold on to Manny, you're going to have to find a way to get that pitching. And, of course, the easiest way to get it was to trade Manny. But the offers aren't out there. You're not just going to give them away for nothing.
You know, I've heard several former front office executives that now are part of national media talking about this. And one said today that the two controllable starters that are major league ready is actually too much for the Orioles to ask for because of, as you said, it's a one-year rental.
Right.
Well, if that's the case, then if you're not going to get back what you feel you need and what you feel you deserve to get back with the talent that Machado's going to take to that next team, then I say you move Manny to shortstop, you go out and get a third baseman, and you worry about it in July, and if you happen to play well, you have one of the best, top five players in all of baseball still on your team, and you hope that he could help. Obviously, the pitching has to come around, but still, there's no reason to simply shop Manny just to get rid of the contract. They don't have to do that, and Dan Duquette has made a point of reminding everybody of that.
Right. And, you know, I hear the argument people have said, they say it about Zach Britton as well, where they should have traded him last winter, and you would have gotten more for him. But the counter argument is, I thought you were trying to win a World Series.
Right.
So that's why you held on to those guys, especially after making the wild card in 16. At that point, you're going to strip the team down because you lost in Toronto in extra innings. That doesn't make sense. Yes, you would have got more for him, but you're supposed to be going for it before this window, the window, slams shut, supposedly, because all these contracts are up after the 2018 season. So they were still going for it. So you're not going to, well, we'll get more from Manny and Zach now and then just give up on the following season. No, they were going for it, and they liked the core that was back, and they thought they could make a run at it, and obviously it didn't work out at all. But it's hard for me to be critical of not moving them sooner. And in this case, now again, with Manny, you know, if you're not going to get that kind of pitching that you need, then you are just moving for the sake of moving them. And I know, you know, there's reports out there, and I wrote about some of the guys or the Cubs have talked about with the Orioles, but there was only the one pitcher, Montgomery, involved in that, who's basically been a swing man. For the Orioles, he might be the number three. Who knows? But again, if you step back and say, okay, that is that enough pitching? Is that all you're getting, the best you can get for Manny? Are you better off than just holding on to him as opposed to letting him go for a left-handed swingman type that you're projecting that can be an everyday or, you know, a regular member of your rotation?
Now, the other aspect of this that I think really it does go hand-in-hand with the lack of enticing offers for Manny Machado to the Orioles is the fact that the free agent market so far has been pretty much non-existent.
Right.
And Mike Moustakas is one of the top free agents, and he is also a third baseman. Manny still is a third baseman until somebody says, oh, he is now the shortstop. And I'm wondering if the lack of any progress in the free agent market is making some clubs take a step back and say, well, let's wait to see. Maybe his price falls, Moustakas. We don't have to give up talent,
right,
and all we have to do is sign him. Now, if Moustakas comes off the board, and if Manny's still an Oriole, how about this scenario? How about Manny play shortstop and the Orioles sign Moustakas?
Yes.
There's the left-handed bat you need.
I would be all for that. Now, I know he's not an on-base guy, and this team needs that, but he's got the power. He's a left-handed bat, and I already knew, hey, they need to add another left-handed bat. But I just did a mock lineup and rotation bullpen bench for a national publication. It has a really early deadline. It was 2 days ago, 3 days ago. I finally turned it in last night, and you can update it up until, like, early January. My mock lineup had one left-handed hitter in it, and that was Chris Davis. If the season started today, I had to put Austin Hayes in right field, and I've got Caleb behind the plate, and obviously Chancisco, if he's the backup, he's a left-handed hitter. But that's as a backup. There's one left-handed hitter in that lineup. That's not going to work. And Dan has said, well, we could probably fit a left-handed bat, corner outfield, maybe DH. But if you have Mark Trumbo as your DH, that left-handed bat is going to be a part-time DH. And in the corner outfield, maybe a platoon guy. for your everyday lineup, you need more than just Chris Davis. And, of course, if Davis repeats the last 2 years he's had, that's not much of a help. So a guy like Moustakas makes perfect sense. Now, I know trade rumors have projected him at 5 years, 85, something like that. The Orioles obviously will be hoping that comes down. But I've heard his name kicked around where it's kind of like floated, like, what about this guy? Is he Greek?
Moustakas?
Yes.
I think so.
Hey. There's another plus. That works. That checks a box. I don't know. I mean, you got to be interested.
I was told there wouldn't be a quiz. The player, we have to break, but we'll get into this in a little bit. But the player I thought the Orioles might have a chance to get, Preston Tucker, who just got released by the Astros, but he didn't get through the National League. The Braves claimed him, so now he's going to go to Atlanta. That would have been a perfect 24 home runs in AAA last year. And the only reason he's not in the major leagues, he was blocked by the outfield that won the World Series.
Yeah, I heard they're pretty good over there.
Yeah, they're doing all right. Jim and Rock were at the Orioles Grill at the Sheridan Inner Harbor. Hot Stove Baseball half hour early tonight because the Terps are in action tonight. They are hosting Fairleigh Dickinson University from New Jersey down there in College Park. 6:30, the pregame show, 7 o'clock tip. We'll take a break. Brock's going to update us on Zach Britton's surgery today. And at the top of the hour, Dylan Bundy's going to call in from his home in Oklahoma. Stay with us here on 105.7 The Fan.
Now, back to the Hot Stove Show on 105.7 The Fan. It's an hour-long look at baseball and the off-season trades and deals. Once again, live from the Orioles Grill at the Sheraton Inner Harbor, here's Jim Hunter on The Fan.
And mark your calendars, Orioles Fan Fest, presented by Visit Sarasota County, all set for Saturday, January 27th. You can join those fans at the Baltimore Convention Center. It's a day-long baseball celebration. You have the player appearances, kids' press conferences, games, autographs, and more. For tickets, visit Orioles.com/FanFest. Jim and Rock, we are at the Orioles Grill at the Sheridan Inner Harbor, our new home for Hot Stove Baseball, and trying to make sense of a very slow beginning, and now we're almost to Christmas. It's still not a lot of movement, and a tough break for Zach Britton as he's working out, getting in shape, and he ruptures his right Achilles tendon, which is his landing leg, not his push-off leg, as a lefty pitcher. And I know you exchanged messages with him today. How'd that surgery go?
Yeah, it went very well, and he actually confirmed it via Twitter. You got to love that. He tweeted, surgery went really well. Want to thank everyone for their support, especially Dr. Kenneth Jung and his staff at Curl and Job. You know, he had told me yesterday when I talked to him that, you know, if there was anything positive at all about this, is that it wasn't, you know, an extensive tear where he was getting descriptive how sometimes the it can, like, roll back up and you have to go in and pull it back down or reattach it to the bone. It wasn't anything like that. And the optimistic timetable was supposed to be, maybe 6 months, something like that? And other people are saying it could be more like 8, whatever. Well, he's very encouraged. I mean, there's talk about, well, maybe he could even be back by May if you're making the comp Adam Wainwright, mm-hmm. who came back in 5 months from his surgery, which may have even been more extensive than Zach's. The Orioles would gladly take June. They would take July. But Zach is thinking maybe even May is a possibility. We'll see. But he, you know, the Orioles and the medical side, Zach, everybody's very encouraged by how it went today. And I always make fun of the whole successful surgery. I mean, it's rarely where a guy's foot falls off or the elbow falls off. They usually are successful, but this certainly rates. I just felt so bad for him yesterday. I mean, you try not to become too emotionally invested, obviously, as you're covering a team. But for a guy who went through, you know, two stints on the disabled list with the forearm strain and then needs the injection in the knee, shut down in September, and he clean bill of health, full go workouts. He's running sprints. He wasn't riding a dirt bike. He wasn't, you know, bungee jumping. The guy is running sprints, working out to come back to the Orioles, and just blows out his Achilles. And any time I know of anybody who's had that injury, that's how it happens. It's just a freakish. You can't explain why. Playing pickup basketball, you're running, whatever, and it happens. And he was devastated when I was talking to him yesterday. The lowest I've ever heard him. I'm assuming he's probably – his spirits have been lifted somewhat today, but it's still – there's going to be a process now. There's going to be a long rehab.
And it also hurts the Orioles in two different scenarios because, number one, if they were entertaining trade offers for Zach, those are now gone.
Right.
And number two, if they were going to keep him because the bullpen on this team is so important because right now there's only two known starters in this rotation – they would need him, and what they were hoping for was a full season of Zach Britton. Last year, he got into only 38 games because of the two separate stints on the DL.
Right.
And then in September, once they were eliminated, he basically got shut down. So they were expecting more. I mean, you look at Michael Givens, who led the team. Michael got into 69 games last year. Zach only pitched in 38, so right. It hurts the Orioles, at least entertaining for a possible trade if they can get something back, but it also hurts the Orioles not having him available for opening day.
Exactly, and again, there's always that domino effect because he was on the table as a possibility, you know, a trade chip. Even though I know Buck hates that expression when you say chip or piece, he always reminds us these are human beings with families, which is true, but that's how we, you know, term it in the business here. And that certainly removed him right now, but I think there's still a thought in the organization that if he comes back May, even June, that could still be in play July 31st,
right.
Or he can help them. And I should add that I have been given no indication, and I poked around a little bit, that this club would consider just releasing Zach.
Right.
And there was some speculation about that. There's a kind of a debate of how much money would he be owed because he was tendered a contract, but they haven't exchanged figures. And I had somebody today say, I don't even know if that's a remote possibility of letting him go. It just doesn't make sense at this point. Another team, of course, would pick him up like he's a free agent out there, and you just wait for him to get healthy. He can be beneficial to the Orioles still as a possible trade chip, depending on how things are going next season, or a guy that you have and you can and can help you. Not out of the realm of possibility that maybe you approach Scott Boras and talk maybe extension now,
mm-hmm.
and say, look, you know, what would you be willing to do? Maybe, you know, obviously 2018 won't necessarily be a wash, but that's not what you're going to be paying for. But what about beyond that? Maybe that changes the figures a little bit. My guess is Scott Boras is going to say, what are you talking about?
Right.
And still try to hit the market hard. But that's something that I'm sure right now is being discussed within the confines of the warehouse.
So what this means at the moment, Brad Brock now takes over as the closer role. He was 18 out of 24 last year, so six blown saves.
We're assuming that they're not going to move him now.
Right. I don't see how you do it because then you're left with Darren O'Day, who they prefer in the setup role, and Michael Givens, who may be the best vulture of all time.
Right. And you destroy your depth.
Exactly. He was 8-1 last year. Givens, by the way, zero career saves. At least Brad Brock has experience.
Right.
Oh, and by the way, we have to congratulate Brad and his lovely
yes.
wife, Jenna. They welcomed their first child, a young daughter. Of course they're young. She was just born. Briley K, 8 pounds, 8 ounces, born on December 18th, so 3 days ago. So congratulations to Brad and Jenna. Now they are parents of a lovely baby daughter just in time for Christmas. And I saw some pictures today that Bonnie showed me on one of the
Instagram.
Social medias. Yeah, and they look so very happy. Well, one of those things I don't know anything about.
And I'm sure Jenna is also quite relieved because if you saw photos of Jenna, I'm sure she was ready at this point. Like, can we just get this done, that poor woman? So I'm sure she's much more comfortable right now.
Now, prior to Zach's injury, were you hearing much talk about Brad?
As far as trade?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, his name came up quite a bit at the winter meetings, but interestingly, I also was hearing that there were teams that were still worried about whether he was completely healthy after the issues with the forearm and then the knee, and that between that, his projected salary in arbitration, which I think trade rumors had at like, what, $12.2 million, that there were some teams that were kind of backing off a little bit. Like, it was hurting his value on the market. I know that frustrated Zach at the time, ironically, because he's like, there were questions about my arm at the trade deadline, and it was totally fine. After that second stint on the DL, he's had no problem with it, and he's pitched with that discomfort in his knees. He's pitched with it when he went 47 for 47.
Right.
And he was full go off season here, so he doesn't understand why there's still kind of that lingering perception, and we could blame some of it on national media. There was a lot of reports on Twitter during the trade deadline. Oh, there's some teams that still aren't sure. Is Buck protecting him by not using him as much as he would have? Because, and Zach's like, what are you talking about? I'm available every night if they want to use me. And then, of course, this ends up happening.
Right.
It's just, you know, just a horrible kind of irony. But there were some teams at the winter meetings that still were like, we're not completely sure that he's 100%.
Brad Brock also was gaining some interest definitely at the winter meetings because he also – well, now he's going to be the Orioles closer unless something happens. But this, without a doubt, has to hurt that because now if the Orioles would even entertain giving up Brad Brock, they're going to have to get a whole bunch back. And Brad's in the same position that Zach is in going into the season,
yeah.
Same as Manny. He's a free agent after the year.
Right. I mean, again, that's the domino effect. And with Zach, I mean, with Brad, there was a lot of interest in him because teams view him as a potential closer or setup guy who isn't going to cost you as much payroll-wise or what you might have to give up. And at the time, and I wrote this in Lake Buena Vista, that, you know, the Orioles were kind of like, okay, we're not going to move Brad if we think there's a possibility of moving Zach. It was going to be one or the other. So kind of what happened with Brad was tied to Zach. If Zach was traded, they were going to hold on to Brad. If they decided we're going to, we may as well keep Zach because we're selling low right now, then they couldn't move Brad. So that's why I would just assume that, and Dan Duquette did bring up Brad yesterday when I talked to him briefly and said about, you know, the bullpen. He said, well, you know, Brad's closed for us and we have Givens and, you know, so he brought up Brad. So I just, you have to assume then that they're not going to move him at this point. And for people that say, well, you're not going to win anyway, what do you need a closer for? Again, Dan still wants this team to be competitive and make a run at it despite any prospective moves. So if you're Brad right now, you're like, hey, I have a new baby, and I'm part of trade rumors, and I might be closing. There's a lot going on in his life right now.
You know, and the other thing, too, and you alluded to it with Michael Givens, the Orioles, at least for 2018, probably would hesitate to change his role right, because he's so good at it. You know, he went 8-1 last year. He's very reliable. He has this ability to come into a game and calm things down. Mm-hmm. And with the offense this team has, he can go about getting a win, and as he did. Another player that fits that mold as well is Miguel Castro. And I know there was talk at the end of the year, and he did get a start late in the year. Why not make him a starter? He has a great arm. But do you take a strength to try to fix a weakness, and then you weaken what your strength was?
Robbing Peter to pay Paul.
There you go.
We'll quote Buck again. Exactly. And with Castro, he is so valuable in that relief role because he goes multiple innings, and he doesn't just, you know, eat innings for you. He stops the bleeding and allows to get back in the game. And it seemed like he was available every other day.
Yeah.
Like, that rubber arm really comes in handy. You hope it holds up. And yet, you know, you always want to develop starters first, and because they have such a need, he will go into camp with a chance to be a starting pitcher. Givens, I was basically untouchable at the winter meetings. They're not moving Michael Givens.
Jim and Rock were at the Orioles Grill in Inner Harbor for Hot Stove Baseball. When we come back, Dylan Bundy joins us by phone from his home in Oklahoma. Stay with us on 105.7 The Fan.
Hey, ball! Back to the Hot Stove Show on 105.7 The Fan. It's an hour-long look at baseball and the off-season trades and deals. Once again, live from the Orioles Grill at the Sheraton Inner Harbor, here's Jim Hunter on The Fan.
And back here at the Orioles Grill, and don't forget, for a limited time, the Junior Orioles Dugout Club memberships are just $20 per plan. They make a great holiday gift for all the O's fans 14 and under. You can choose between two plan options and get a sneak peek at this year's club kit, which includes a backpack, a hat, a wall banner, and more. Just go to Orioles.com/dugout club. Jim and Rock on this Thursday night, final show before Christmas. We are off next week and then back at it after the New Year's celebration. And right now we're going to head on by phone to Oklahoma and welcome in one of the two starting pitchers that we know is in the rotation. Dylan Bundy joins us. Dylan, how are you? Merry Christmas.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Rock. Merry Christmas to you guys, too.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate your time tonight. Now, as a player, you know, this offseason, Dylan, has been very slow developing and moving. How closely do you watch or monitor what the Orioles are doing to see who might be on your team when you head to spring training? Do you follow it much?
Oh, right about now is when I start paying more attention to it, just because it's getting closer to that time, you know, headed back to spring training. So right about now is when I start looking up what everybody's done and what we're doing as a team.
Do you get messages from your teammates, maybe talking off the record about either what is being done or not being done?
Yeah, I mean, every now and then a few of us will talk and see what's going on, and if we traded anybody or if we got a new player, what we're thinking, and just talk about the upcoming season and how excited we are to get it going.
Do you get, I don't know, a little nervous about the possibility? I mean, there was a lot of talk about whether this team should rebuild or you reload, and there were some pretty big names that were being bantered about as far as being trade chips. You heard, you know, Zach, you heard Brad Brock, you heard Manny, obviously. Do you hear that sort of thing and think, okay, I know it's a business, I understand where they'd be coming from, but you really want this team to be able to go for it again, and it's going to be a little bit harder to do that if you lose these guys?
Yeah, it'll be harder, but it all depends on what you get back. But, I mean, yeah, it's a business. It's an industry. So you got to look at it from both sides and try to look at the best possible outcome on whatever the decisions we make. So, and I don't get to make those decisions. I leave it up to them, so I don't have to deal with it. But, you know, I just look forward to going to spring training every year and with whatever team we got, you know, to win.
When you kind of look at the rotation, I mean, this is kind of an odd off season in that you only know yourself, there's Kevin Gausman, and then we don't know. There's a whole lot of empty. I mean, with you know, yeah. Ellickson, a free agent, Ubaldo, Miley, Tillman, obviously. What's that like for you when you really have no idea beyond yourself and Kevin what's going to happen with this rotation?
Yeah, I actually called Kevin the other day, and me and him kind of talked about it. We were like, we're the only two starters that are for sure coming back, you know. You know, in the years past, we had Ubaldo, Tillman, and Wade. This year, you know, it's just kind of me and Gausman going back for sure, depending on what we do here in the next few weeks, I'm assuming. But it's different. I don't really know how to explain it, but it's exciting.
Dylan, last year you were able to make 28 starts and you increased your career high in innings. You went up by 60 innings, which is really noticeable for a young pitcher coming back and adding to that. And one of the things about your season that really jumped out, you had 19 quality starts in your 28. And when you consider that Chris Sale and Justin Verlander led Major League Baseball, and they had 23, only four more than you. To me, that's something that must be very important to you, to try as often as you can, and you did the majority of the time, each time you take the ball to give your team a chance to win, because you did it. 19 quality starts on the year, which led the Orioles.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge stat, getting as many quality starts as you can. That usually means you're keeping your team in the game for the best possibility of getting a win. You know, that's your main goal, is to get 6, 7, 8 innings as long as you can possible in each and every game, and keeping your team in the game to get a win. And, you know, that's what the starter's job is to do, is just to give your team the best possible chance of winning.
Well, last year you brought back, and you had a lot of fun with this. You told us, call it whatever you want. We don't know if it's a cutter. We don't know if it's a slider, but it was a very effective pitch for you, especially early on. I mean, your first 8 starts, you went 5-1, and your ERA was 2.26. Are you looking forward to this season coming up, even expanding on that to have more control or more command of that secondary pitch as you go forward?
Yeah, but not just the slider, you know. I'd rather have control of all my secondary pitches a little bit more than last year. You know, as a starting pitcher or any pitcher, you're always working on stuff. And for me, that's all my pitches, really. And if one of them takes a leap forward, then, you know, that's awesome. But, yeah, I mean, slider's a great pitch to righties and lefties. And teams know that I use it now. So I'm going to have to be able to spot up when I need to and also bounce it if I need to.
Maybe we could finally come up with the actual name for this pitch instead of going back and forth.
Well,
it's a cutter, it's a slider. We need to pick one.
I like what Dylan says. Call it what you want.
Right. We'll just come up with our own name.
Yeah,
would you
call it what we want.
That thing.
A strike.
We'll just,
yeah. What would you consider the most valuable lesson that you learned this past season?
Just trying to take care of your body and putting yourself in the best possible situation to go out there and succeed and do well for your team. And whether that's working out more, running more, or running less, I don't know, stretching more, just learning how to take care of your body throughout that 6, 7 month season.
And how important, you say less, and I've heard that from people in the organization. You're one of those kind of rare guys where you had to almost be told, look, you got to pull it back a little bit. It's better to have to do that than have to push somebody to work harder. But was that an important thing for you, and kind of went against how you normally were, your personality, where you actually had to kind of make yourself back off a little bit for the good of your health?
Yeah, some points in the season, you know, there's different points in the season. Earlier in the year, you know, you probably wanted to work a little bit more, run a little bit more because it's colder out. And then when you get in the dog days in August and September, you know, it's hot out, so your body's fatigued a little bit. So maybe one day in between starts, you got to take it a little easier that day. But that's probably the biggest thing I learned last year, was knowing my body and knowing when I needed rest or when I needed to do more.
Dylan, it's no secret the Orioles' rotation needs to improve to be able to contend. Last year, combined 5.70 ERA, the highest of any starting staff in the league. Does that in some way put even more pressure on you and Kevin? Because we know you're going to be in the rotation. We know the quality and the ability that you each possess. Do you allow that to enter into your thought process at all?
I don't like to really think of it as pressure, because that last season was last season. It's over now. So me and Gazi are looking forward to going into next season and do, you know, building on last year and doing better than we did last year. We obviously need to pick it up, and that's what we plan on doing.
Well, you've been a starter now for a year and a half, and you're 21-14 as a starter. And when you see a winning record like that, that certainly jumps out as the potential to be a top-of-the-rotation starter. And I know ever since you were drafted out of high school, that's something that was projected of you. Do you feel now that you're starting to get to the point, you have the 2017 season now under your belt, you have all that experience, Rock asked you about what did you learn. Now maybe in 2018 you could take that next step to what was projected of you when you were drafted.
Yeah, I mean, that's my main goal, is to be a full-time starter and at the top of the rotation. And that means getting 32 or 33-plus starts a year and hopefully getting over 200 innings and doing that for multiple years. And that's kind of what I'm looking forward to do this season, and get over 30 starts and get my innings up there. And like I said, I just want to go out there every 5 days and give my team the best chance.
How much are you looking forward to in spring training not being asked about a potential innings limit? And you got my vow right here that I will never use the phrase innings limit anytime I'm around you.
All right, that sounds good. Yeah. The injury questions, the innings limit, the slider, cutter, I'm glad those are behind me now.
I can't promise the last one, but the first two I can. I kind of jump on topics, but what was your reaction when you found out about Zach Britton's injury, that he ruptured the Achilles tendon? We're told that the surgery went really well today, but nonetheless, I mean, after you were close to it, what he went through to come back from the forearm injuries, the knee in September, and then to find out that he has this injury while he was just working out.
Yeah, I think the first time I saw it was on Twitter or on TV, I think, and I didn't want to believe it at first. I thought it was just a typo, but yeah, it's hard. Injuries like that, especially ones that just doing a simple wind sprint like that, and it just shows you how short this can be and how careful you got to be with your body and take care of it. But I'm sure he's going to work hard and maintain his rehab and get back to health as soon as he can.
Now, Dylan, I know when the season ended, you were looking forward to a normal off season. What have you been doing, and where are you as we approach Christmas in your off season workouts? And when do you really begin to step it up?
I'd say right after Christmas is when I really start to step it up and concentrate on throwing and stuff like that. But I've been running and lifting now for about 2 or 3 weeks and getting back in shape. But as soon as I got home, the first 2 months was strictly hunting. That was it, and taking care of my property and trying to get on some deer. And I got my 2 deer this year, and now I'm trying to get my brother to get a deer. And that's pretty much what we've been doing, hunting and spending time in the outdoors with our family.
So you and Bobby have a little competition, I hear.
Oh, I don't know if it's like that, but I've gotten my 2 deer this year, and he's at 0 right now, so we're trying to get
him counting?
One.
Who's counting? How's Bobby doing? I'm not sure if he's a minor league free agent. I know I always ask you kind of keeping track of what's going on with him.
Yeah, Bobby's doing good. He's up here at the academy here in my small hometown we got, doing lessons right now. I'm actually up here about to do some running and throwing, so. I'll see him here in a minute, but he's doing well. Like I said, trying to get a deer for sure. But I think, yeah, he's a minor league free agent and, looking for a job.
Mm-hmm. And also, again, I'm jumping topics around here, but, as far as we know, the entire coaching staff is back next season. They were all offered contracts. We're just waiting for the official announcement once everything's signed. I think they want to just announce everybody at once, but what was it like working with Roger McDowell this summer, and how does that kind of compare to some other guys that you've had in the past?
I'm not real big on, comparing people, but I worked well with him. He was easy to talk to and had a lot of knowledge. Obviously, he's been in the game a long time, and he's helped me out, and I'm looking forward to working with him again for a second season.
So, Dylan, as Christmas approaches, and you mentioned you have your academy there and you enjoy the outdoors, what are the special Christmas traditions in the Bundy family?
Well, what's pretty funny, and everybody thinks it's kind of gross at first, but until you try it, it's really good. So I don't know how it started or when the tradition started, but we do Christmas on Christmas morning, and then before we can open any presents, we have to eat chocolate biscuits and gravy. So it's gravy, but it's like a chocolate base.
Wow.
And, yeah, I don't know who started it or when, but all I know is when I was young and last time I remember was us eating chocolate biscuits and gravy Christmas morning before we could open any presents.
And that's still on the training table to this day.
Does Brady Anderson know about this?
Yeah.
No, he don't. But he will now.
He will now when Rock writes about it.
Yeah. Good thing is you only want to eat it for about, you know, two or three biscuits, and then you're done. You're tired of chocolate for a while.
Well, Dylan, we really appreciate you calling in tonight. Best to you and your family. Have a very Merry Christmas, and we'll look forward to seeing you here in January come FanFest time. Thanks so much, and have a great holiday.
All right, guys. Thank you. You too. I'm excited.
All right. That's Dylan Bundy joining us from his home in Oklahoma. We got to get the recipe for that. Not Bonnie and I are on this low-carb thing. I don't think I'd be allowed to eat that.
Probably not. And it's probably a lot of sugar, too. There's a lot that's wrong with that.
Well, if you can have one.
Maybe one. You have to show some restraint.
Maybe we could get the recipe and pass it on. We'll come back and wrap it up. Final segment coming up with the Orioles Grill at the Sheraton Inner Harbor, our new home for Hot Stove Baseball, weekly food and drink specials here. And how do they take care of us here? We just had a birthday cake in between commercials. Thank you so much to the staff for doing that. That was very nice of you. Hot Stove Baseball on 105.7 The Fan.
Hey, ball! Back to the Hot Stove Show on 105.7 The Fan. It's an hour-long look at baseball and the off-season trades and deals. Once again, live from the Orioles Grill at the Sheraton Inner Harbor, here's Jim Hunter on The Fan.
And back here on Hot Stove Baseball, reminding you, you can escape the cold of winter when you book your official Orioles spring training travel package, which includes your choice of accommodations, a rental car, game tickets, invitation-only VIP events, you get team gear, and much more. Now, space is limited, so don't delay. Join the O's in sunny Sarasota by visiting Orioles.com/spring. Spring training is a lot of fun for the fans, mostly day games. You get to go out there and watch baseball under the sunshine. You escape winter a little bit, and you see how the Orioles are coming along. Jim and Rock, our final segment, the Terps in action tonight. 105.7 The Fan hosting Fairley Dickinson, who made the trip down from New Jersey. 6:30 pregame show follows us at 7 o'clock tip. I'm 105.7 The Fan.
So okay. It's fairly soon.
I see what
By the way, Jim, can I point out quickly that one week when I'm here, we're here for the show, somebody in the crowd sent over a dirty martini for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to – no confirmation of whether I drank it. And now there's cake tonight because it's your birthday. The Oriole Grill's the greatest place ever.
Isn't this great?
Martini, cakes, I may never leave. Love these people.
And we want to thank everybody for coming out tonight. We really do appreciate it. We have a nice little following here. Justin's won two prizes tonight.
He's on a roll.
He never misses a show.
So. See, that's how you win prizes.
Justin,
you got to show up.
What grade are you in now? Third grade. He's our third grader. Last year was a second grader, didn't miss a show. And so far, perfect attendance so far this year for Justin and his dad, Bob.
See, he knows more about the Orioles than anybody else in this class.
All right.
I betcha.
So I'm hoping this battery doesn't die before I have to sign off. Tim gave me a sign-off, so we're not late for the Terps. All right, I want to delve into some of the starting pitcher free agents. Mm-hmm. We know that Darvish is certainly not somebody they're going after, Jake Arrieta as well, because of the price tag and the years. But that second tier, and again, there's been no movement whatsoever on these pitchers. Lance Lynn and Alex Cobb are the two names you hear most often that are in that next tier. But apparently, you know, looking at the national media, both of those pitchers, their price tag right now is very, very high. And as a result, little to no movement on them.
Yeah, I saw a report where Cobb's looking for $20 million a year. I don't know for how many years, but I didn't have to even ask that. $20 million a year is not going to work for the Orioles, and you know Lynn's going to be doing the same thing. So, and they're considered the upper level of the second tier. But the guys below them, what did Tyler Chatwood get? Was it $38 million, something like that? I mean, so the Orioles, again, like I said, they don't want to spend that much on pitching. And Dan Duquette already said at the winter meetings he doesn't believe in going 4 or 5 years now on a starter. So it's going to be three or fewer. But how much are you going to spend when these are like lower second-tier, third-tier guys that are getting the big contracts? And we won't even talk about the relief market, which is why the Orioles suddenly were like, hey, maybe we're more open before the Britton injury to dealing from our strength because – bless his heart, Tommy Hunter got, what, $18
million? Yeah, two-year deal.
2 years after, I believe, last winter, there was talk here of bringing it back on maybe a, for like $1 million, invite, nothing guaranteed, and that was being kicked around within the organization, and then all of a sudden he's worth $18 million. I mean, the money is out there. Jim, I wish I had, like, worked a little bit more on my slider when I was a kid.
All right, one pitcher that is tied to the Orioles, and this is because he's a lefty and is on the level below Lynn and Cobb, is Jason Vargas.
Right.
Now, Vargas, a lefty, had a great year in Kansas City, turns 35 in February. He went 18-11 with the Royals this past season. That tied him for the most wins in all of Major League Baseball. Carlos Carrasco had 18 with the Indians. Corey Kluber had 18 with the Indians. And Clayton Kershaw, despite missing time with the bat back, he also had 18 with the Dodgers. The one thing about his season, though, that I'm wondering about, he was 12-3 in his first 16 starts. Then he went 6-8 in his final 16 starts. His ERA went from 2.22 to 6.66. So the question is, he's an innings eater. He's a pitch-to-contact guy. Is he somebody that can come in and, at a minimum, give the Orioles the left-handed pitcher they need and crave and eat the innings? Which of these two pitchers would they be getting?
Maybe somewhere in the middle, and I'm sure it'll still be the exact same number across because he went 2-2-2 and 6-6-6. But, yeah, I mean, they've prioritized getting a left-hander. That's a guy that interests them. They're talking about him. At what price? I don't know what's out there for him, what the market is. That might be a guy, even though I'd say on the surface you kind of lay back and see what you can get. Maybe his price comes down. But then, as Dan said, they may have to be a little more proactive and be more aggressive because these guys are going to start coming off the board and because they're not just looking for one starter. They're basically looking for, you know, again, at least two for this rotation and maybe five overall if you want to look at AAA depth as well. So you can't lay back too long. That's definitely a guy that interests them, and it's not – the real sexy signing. People kind of yawn when they hear that. But he would be an upgrade over Wade Miley, no offense to Wade, and you're looking for improvements in your rotation. He was a guy that would be very useful for them. That just can't be your marquee acquisition of the winter, but it certainly would be a very good piece.
Now, Scott Boras, obviously, he likes to let the market play out.
Yes.
He's in a hurry to do nothing. He's obviously controlling this market because of how many free agents he has. But I'm wondering with some of the other players who are out there still without a team, you know, Christmas is coming up on Monday, and usually the families get a little nervous when the baseball player in the family doesn't have a contract yet. And I'm wondering when this is going to start, because if you think about it, once you get into January, the agents have to worry about the arbitration-eligible players that they represent. The free agents still may be getting in the way of that, and I'm wondering if maybe, as you just alluded to, that some of these guys do say, you know what, let's drop our price a little bit, let's try to get 2 or 3 years, and we'll get it done now.
Right, but you know, that's how Scott Boras, one of the many ways he earns his money, is because he's able to somehow keep these guys calm when they go to him saying, look, you know, it's almost Christmas, it's after Christmas, rosters are filling up, and somehow Scott usually can get them to calm down and then get a good deal later. Not all the time, but it happens frequently. So, and I'm sure that's going to be one of the ways, again, that he's earning that paycheck is by telling guys, look, you know, he can read the market pretty well normally, and he knows which teams he can kind of bring into it later. But, yeah, I mean, if I'm that player and I see some guys, you know, start to come off the board, I see teams filling their needs elsewhere. If I'm a stockist, I'm probably getting a little nervous where teams are like, okay, well, forget Manny. Now we're going to have to go this way, and they may go ahead and say, well, okay, well, we're not going to spend that much on you, and maybe his market comes down a little bit because there are some third basemen available. I don't even know if Chase Headley might be. He went to the Padres, and there was talk that they might flip him. There are other options for teams that may say, you know what, then we'll spend our money elsewhere and not worry so much about third base.
All right, well, third base, assuming Manny does move over to shortstop for the Orioles.
And I think that's a good assumption.
Because he's still an Oriole, and you know, Buck alluded to it, and apparently Manny wants it. The two marquee free agents at third base, we talked about Mike Moustakas. He's a perfect fit here if Manny's the shortstop because of the left-handed bat.
Right.
But there's also Todd Frazier's out there. And the thing about Frazier is strikes out a lot. The average has been slipping, but he's a 25 to 30 home run guy, which on this team fits right in. And the other thing is he's one of those players that just has a flair for the clutch situation. And that's a kind of a guy, a real good clubhouse guy, would blend in perfectly on this team. That might be another avenue to go, especially if it's not a long-term deal.
Right, and exactly. That's a guy who would fit well, winning pedigree. There are things about him that you like. Right-handed bat, so that would be the one drawback. But, yeah, I mean, he would be somebody in play as well. And no matter who you put there, they're not going to be at Manny's level defensively.
Right.
Unless the Rockies want to send Arenado over. Otherwise, you're not going to find that guy. So you're going to have to accept that. That you're not going to have that, exactly that same guy. And we don't know what kind of shortstop Manny would be. We're making the assumption he'd be a good one.
Right.
We haven't seen him over a full season. But, yeah, there are some other options out there, but at what cost? It always comes back to that. And I know they don't want to spend a lot for a position guy because they have so many needs in the rotation and whatever, but you may have to do that. If you move men, you need a third baseman. And Ryan Mountcastle is not ready defensively to be that guy, and there's nobody else in your organization. You're going to have to go outside to get somebody.
All right, it's our final show before Christmas. We'll be back in 2 weeks. What are the big plans for the Kabatko family?
We're finally going to be able to meet up. My parents live on the Eastern Shore, and my sister is available, and I'm available the one weekend. It's after Christmas. It's like January 5th. But I believe Christmas Day, Emily's mom is going to make us dinner, and I will sneak to the little TV that never gets used in that house and check some football scores and race back, and we'll have a good time.
Well, that's great. So you're going to have a big Christmas celebration a week after Christmas.
Yes, I like to extend it. You know, there are more presents coming here and there. It's nice. Why should you confine it to 1 or 2 days?
Now, I don't know if Emily heard, but we put a lot of pressure on you to buy her those 17 presents for Christmas.
Oh, she'll do quite well. You know what? We're going to New York to see Hamilton on February 1st.
Oh, wow.
I got tickets spring training, and I was so excited. I'm like, I already got your Christmas present. Do you want to know what it is? I could have just waited and really surprised her. I told her, like, in February or March. But, yes, then February 1st we'll be in New York for Hamilton.
Isn't that
sure? I'm not a great guy. How about me? What a boyfriend, huh?
Isn't it impossible to get tickets for Hamilton? How did you pull that off?
You know, that's why it's February 1st. I mean, they went back on sale, and then you had to try and find two seats together that were available at a pretty good, you know, reasonable cost. And by reasonable, yeah, she's worth it, though. She's worth every penny.
Wow.
More points. More
How
points for
that?
Me.
Wow. All right. Well, the Hunter family, we have a very big Christmas Eve. All the kids and their spouses will be home.
You have a big dining room table. Good for you.
We sure do. We sure do. Actually, we go out to dinner on Christmas Eve.
Oh, okay.
It's too much work for Bonnie.
Yeah, I got it.
So the kids and their spouses will be home, mass dinner. We watch Scrooge, and we all hang out, exchange presents.
Beautiful.
And then they go to the other side of the family on Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. So Christmas is a little laid back for Bonnie and I, which is okay.
That's okay.
Just hang out with Bobby and Sadie and go next door for dessert, and everything works out.
And just show my religious side. Emily's mom sings in a choir, so Christmas Eve, 11 p.m. service, we'll be there. I'll be in church listening to the choir sing.
Right, can you prove
and
that?
Giving my thanks.
Emily, we want pictures of Rock in Church, okay, to prove that he actually came through and showed up. And again, I want to thank everybody here for coming down tonight. And again, to the staff of the Orioles Grill, that was a very lovely gesture with the birthday cake. And everybody got some birthday cake here tonight. Thanks so much for coming out. Rock and I are back in 2 weeks after the new year and after the big Kabatko Christmas in January on the Eastern Shore. Looking forward to that. Now, stay tuned here on 105.7 The Fan. The Terps, they're at home against Fairleigh Dickinson University. What's their nickname? The Knights? The Knights. I should know that. They're from New Jersey. But, by the way, Seton Hall, another big win last night. They're 23rd in the nation, so go Seton Hall. Maryland coming your way here on 105.7 The Fan. Have a great Christmas, everybody, and a Happy New Year. And we'll see you back here in 2 weeks on Hot Stove Baseball on 105.7 The Fan.